Hello, I'm Candy, and welcome to this episode of the Backstage Pass. Today we have someone very, very special. Their talent knows no limits. Introducing the incredible drag artist, Megan Rain. Megan is versatile and a visionary, and creates every aspect of her acts with fashion inspirations such as Alexander McQueen and icons such as Madonna and Lady Gaga. They specialize in fashion design, makeup, and burlesque in drag. We talk about how it feels to be a drag performer in the cabaret world and what it's like to live in such a creative mind. Megan also entices us about a very exciting new act where they created absolutely everything, including the graphics. Megan has said to me that because my podcast is relaxed and completely stripped back, they wanted to record the podcast in the same way. An incredible, honest, and thought-provoking chat. Let's go. So I'm sitting with someone who is multi-talented, a cabaret and sideshow performer, an incredible costume designer and creator, and even a self-taught photographer. Where does your creativity come from?
I think my creativity, honestly, as a kid, as a queer person, very much was into escapist media, films. I was very much into theatre. The shows I kind of leaned towards were more fantasy, otherworldly. And that honestly started my keen interest in behind the scenes of production. And then my dad, who was a very big part of it, big DIY boy, we together worked on many projects together, such as building sheds and things in our garden. And seeing him take a bunch of materials and make something grand out of it honestly sent me a bit sideways, because I remember, like, for one birthday I asked for a TARDIS, a life-size TARDIS for me to play in. I remember when we had a swimming pool, I wanted to build like a big mermaid tail. And that honestly was kind of like the start of everything, was seeing him just like take all the materials and make something big, because he's basically done the whole house up by himself.
Wow.
Which is incredible.
Yes.
And I'm from Essex, so it's all like crushed velvet, diamantes, like grand.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's no facts the way I turned out the way that I did growing up in that place. Yeah. The tan didn't stick. The tan didn't stick, but the glamour did.
Yes.
But it was very much through him and like seeing him make these big things that I was like, wow, like I want to do this. Because being into like films, that my favorite, all-time favorite movie as a kid was Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yes.
I know. And I'd always just watch it and be like, how did they do this? How did they do this? It's so interesting. The way that they do things nowadays is absolutely baffling. So that definitely was like the start of like what made me want to be creative, was seeing him doing the things that he did.
Yeah. And it's really good that it came from your dad as well, because he's always going to be behind you and supporting, you know. And it's really good to have creative parents. I certainly did.
Yeah.
You know, I was used to my dad tap dancing in the kitchen in the morning and mum just being crazy and dancing. And it's really nice when you have that foundation of creativity to go from.
Yeah.
Because it's sort of who you are from the very beginning.
Your dad sounds like a nice morning alarm, just like a little...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, let's get up. Let's
yeah,
get
up. he was very excited. Oh, and he loved musicals as well. Yeah. And I was brought up on Wizard of Oz, Singing in the Rain, Cabaret as well.
Oh.
Yeah. So how did you get into the cabaret scene?
So I've always had a keen interest on that scene without kind of knowing it. Say, for instance, I'm a big fan of a show called American Horror Story.
Nice.
And one of my favorite seasons, although a bit subjective, was Freak Show. And I just loved this world of theatre that was so grand and it was so personable, but it was also big production.
Yeah.
And when I started working in Soho as a bartender, which is a Freedom Bar, which...
My favourite.
I started there as a bartender, and then a hosting job became available. And that's how I got into hosting. That's where I got my first gigs. And then I wanted to leave there because working in nightlife, stressful, manic, tiresome. And I wanted to leave there and go somewhere a bit more subtle, or not subtle, a bit more toned down, but not necessarily moving out of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
My good friend Chris Clegg, who's an incredible producer for more so drag artists, but West End, like, does multiple projects. He told me that Phoenix were looking for a host.
Ah.
And I was like, I've never heard of this place. It's a cute, lovely little underground bar in Soho, which I've seen you at a few times.
Yes.
Before. Yes, I know you're a big fan.
Yeah.
And I joined there and I was like, wow, this place is the talent, like the diversity, the acts. It was just like walking into like a museum.
Mm.
And I loved it. And funny enough, not many people at the Phoenix know this, but I started there with the intention of being there for a month just to keep working. And then I can like figure out what's next and then move on. Lo and behold, 2 years later, I'm still there. And it's like my home now, honestly.
It's beautiful though, yeah. Isn't it? It does feel like home. Even when you're there as a guest,
yeah.
You walk in and you just feel so welcomed and so appreciated, and you don't really want to leave.
No.
You know, it is a lovely place. So yeah. I totally get that.
That's honestly the kind of, as the host of the Phoenix, the kind of vibe that I try and nurture on the door is like, get everyone in, make them feel at home, comfy. Because the shows, some of the acts at the Phoenix are quite intense in the sense of like sword swallowing, eating fire, people swinging around on these big aerial pieces of equipment. And like to have them just like really relax and like experience something they've most likely never experienced before.
Mm.
Like that's really like, it just kind of opens your eyes. And that's really what like we try and do at the Phoenix is make everyone come in and just have like
an awakening.
Yeah.
It definitely does that. And it's a mood elevator as well. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever I go to a cabaret show, I've said this before, you know, it makes me feel like I'm buzzing for days,
yeah.
You know, just the whole experience, the talent. It does something, and the music and the lighting, you're just excited, liberated. Yeah. It's just, it is an amazing place, an amazing industry as well.
And just seeing the new acts that we have. I mean, some of the acts that we have, we had one recently who was a contortionist, and they'd only been doing it for about a year and a half.
Wow.
And they were still having like a bit of confidence issues of like imposter syndrome.
Aww.
It's like, babes, like seriously, the crowd went wild.
Mm.
Because the things they were doing, I was like, not even I've seen that before. And I've been working in a cabaret venue for 2 years. Like, it's just seeing the kind of people that come through and like all the new talent that come up. Because Colin, who owns the Phoenix and also books the shows, he is always keeping an eye out for up and coming performers. And it always keeps it fresh and it always keeps it inspiring. Because we have some people here who have been in the industry for 15, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some people come in who've only been there for a year and a half. And it's them still like exploring and discovering. But they have such an immense amount of talent that's obviously taken a couple of years to garner and like nurture. And it's just the most inspiring thing, even for people that work there.
What are your inspirations?
My inspirations. I feel like this is a forever changing answer.
Yes.
I feel like at my core, my biggest inspirations are probably people like Alexander McQueen, people that went into industries. Yes, that was a nice,
Yes, story. Yes.
People that go into industries that aren't necessarily one specific way, but they go into it and just completely tear it up, change it.
Yes.
Just such like a powerhouse of creativity and knowledge. And it's people like that that at my core keep me going. But my inspirations honestly change every day. I like love exploring new types of media, artists, even outside of the art realm. There's so many things that can, I mean, one of my favorite burlesque acts that I do is squirt much cream on myself. It's just like silly things like that. Like, foods, like places in the world that you can explore. So that honestly, I think is a good thing, is keeping your flow of inspiration forever open in a sense. Yeah, I think people like Alexander McQueen and my core, I carry him with me everywhere.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah,
it's gorgeous.
It's a gorgeous bracelet.
Yeah, I think he's just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Really.
Honestly.
Yeah.
I remember getting into him quite young. And thinking, oh, maybe I shouldn't be looking at things like this. Because it's very risque.
Yes.
But on someone that grew up on things like Little Britain, like them shows that are a bit like, maybe not the best for a kid to be watching.
No.
It didn't really seem crazy to me.
Mm.
But McQueen, honestly, was probably my introduction to couture, And like I said, with Growing Up Creative, which we'll get into later about the sewing, that honestly was kind of like a big figurehead of making me wanting to get into fashion and designing and creating, because some of the things that he came up with are just honestly, gorgeous.
So gorgeous. Just like going through my mind of all the things that I wanted to buy and couldn't afford. Incredible designer. My God. But going back to you, you are known as Megan Rain. How would you describe her?
That, honestly, I don't feel like a lot of drag performers have this kind of mindset, because with drag, you have to be very branded and you have to have a look. But with Megan, I am forever evolving and changing. Kind of like one of my other favorite artists, Madonna, is like always looking for different avenues to take. I think at her core, Megan is very glamorous to start off with. And I'd like to think she's very exciting. That's how when I started getting into cabaret, I wanted to pick up all these little new tricks. So when I do shows that aren't necessary in cabaret, and I'm going to more like drag audiences, they're seeing things that they would never have seen.
That's great.
I think she's a bit of a punk rocker, even when she's dripping in ostrich feathers and glass stones. But I mean, one of my favorite numbers that I do is to a Motley Crue song. And I'm coming out as a showgirl drenched in glass stones. See, I think it's honestly probably not the answer I was looking for. A bit of a mystery that I myself don't fully know yet.
I like that, though.
Yeah. I like to keep all the doors open.
I mean, definitely glamorous, exciting, 100%. And you do have this slight mysterious thing about you. And I think that could be your golden ticket, really.
Yeah.
Because if people are being, this is my brand, this is who I am, putting all cards on the table, there's nothing really left to give. They can learn new tricks, but that is their brand. Whereas you've got so many versatile looks, the makeup, the hair, so different. So you could be so many different types of characters within that one umbrella of Megan Rain. I think that's really, really good. Not limited to anything, just exploring.
And I think the fun thing with that as well is having so many different looks is I can really, depending on how I'm feeling, tap into that. Because sometimes you'll see me covered in latex. Well, I say covered. Very minimal cover.
Yes.
sometimes you'll see me in like a gown or something, like just having different avenues you can really, which we'll also get into why I love drag so much, is being able to use it as a means of expressing yourself fully with like how I'm feeling that day, which is really amazing.
Yeah, that is good that you can be that.
Yeah.
Because I guess in everyday life, you'd be like, okay, well, I'm feeling a little bit like I want to be cozy, so you can wear a jumper. Yeah. But, you know, you can take it to that extreme of I'm going to wear the feathers today. Yeah. I'm going to embrace that winter season.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's getting a bit warmer now. Let's wear the very minimal latex. Yeah. I want to be powerful.
Wow. You say wear sweaters in winter, but in winter I was still wearing latex. I was still on the door like...
Latex in the cold. It's freezing.
Yes, it really is. She's committed, though. She's committed.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. I think I was leaving. I think it was Torture Garden. It gets a mention. It has to. I think it was like 5 a.m. This is going back about, 12 years ago.
Okay.
And I was wearing a latex, like, catsuit. And it just, I thought, oh, wear a coat on the top.
Yeah.
And then when I went outside, I went, I might as well be in a freaking freezer.
Yeah.
I was so cold. Took me the rest of the day and a hot bath to actually warm up again.
No, you always see me from wearing latex with a big shaggy fur coat on top. I look a bit like a pimp, but I like to stand outside like chain smoking. I love it.
It's a nice look.
Yeah. Latex isn't a seasonal thing, so we are.
Yes. Yeah. I do love a bit of latex.
Get it.
I am. Yes, definitely. One question I definitely wanted to ask you was about being a drag queen, because it's still massively misunderstood. And I think partly because people don't take the time to get to understand why the person wants to be that way, you know, to express themselves in that way. I think people do say, oh, I don't get that. And we've said, you know, previously that I don't know, it doesn't sit right with me. I think that to be able to understand and be brought into the world would help so many people understand, to open their mind, you know, because you're seeing someone and making an assumption based on absolutely nothing. You know, it's difficult. I mean, can you tell me how it feels to be Megan in that world and your journey to becoming her, if that's okay with you?
Yeah, of course. I think it's a very complex issue when it revolves around drag, because it comes into gender binaries. It's very political. We know drag's political.
Yes.
I think it's a fear of the unknown. I think as well, in the UK, we're very lucky to have Panto, which obviously for years and years and years has opened people's eyes to the art of drag.
Mm.
But still within that, it's typically a caricature of a laughing stock.
This is very true.
For audiences that aren't aware. Mm. And I think with that, we also have the whole debate around trans people. And that's why, because they don't understand, it's always kind of an interlocked problem of trying to educate people on the difference on the art form of drag and living as a trans person, because they're obviously completely different.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think also drag performers and trans people, or queer people in general, is used as a political navigator in terms of, you know, I think we all know, we've seen the news.
Yes.
When they need to divert some tension.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I think people are becoming more understanding and open-minded to what drag is. But I think as well, for people that aren't necessarily comfortable living life on their terms or feel kind of constrained by the way that they were brought up, they don't really feel comfortable giving that permission to other people in a way.
Yeah, I know what
you
mean.
So it's still kind of in the kind of the ladder of that, in that sense.
Yeah.
I think we are getting there, but I think the last few years specifically, the way that it's becoming a lot very political again, it's withdrawing, which is annoying, because when it comes to getting ready, I'd love to sit at home, luxury, dressing gown, paint the face, have ambient music, candle lights.
Sounds amazing.
It does sound amazing. But I always get ready at the gig now, because I've had a few too many instances of trouble getting to work. And not all of us can afford Ubers all the time. So getting ready for me typically takes, this is a big question. Getting ready for me typically takes about an hour to do my face and about half an hour to get everything else on. Depending on what it is. If it's latex, a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I typically, at my resident place, the Phoenix, will sit backstage, listen to the sound tech, get a little groove going. And I'm typically on the verge of running late because I love sitting backstage and just
chatting.
Because everyone's got so much interesting stuff going on. And everyone likes a little gossip.
Yes.
So it took me an hour and a half to get ready. And honestly, when that lash goes on, it is the lash for me. I put on the lash, and then just when everything's
ready.
Yes. And it's so funny because I didn't actually notice until about 2 months ago when someone said to me how different I am in and out of drag. And then I was like, kept thinking about it every time I was in drag. And I was like, my whole persona literally just comes out. And I think that is part of it, is the expression of part of you that you don't really get to show.
Yes.
Because out of drag, I'm quite introverted, just kind of sticks to myself, live my life. And then in drag, it's like the most like power struck, confident, I wouldn't say necessarily sexual, just like she's very like flirtatious.
Yeah. So don't forget, I met you first as Megan.
Yes, you did.
So that was my first impression, and you were sexy and powerful and confident and playful, but very, very sweet.
Yeah.
Which is the bit that is you. That is you. Yeah. You know, that's the bit that, you know, you as you are stripped back today as Jack, but still just sweet and gorgeous and lovely. So it's not like you're completely changing you, but you're probably enhancing those qualities and bringing out the bits, like you said, that you can't always express.
Yeah.
I think it's good for people to be able to do that. I mean, that is partly why I go to places like Torture Gardens. I can sort of be the me that I have to keep, not hidden, but, you know, you can't always go out dressed out in latex. It's not, I mean, I mean, you should. But, you know, you can't always express yourself in the way that you want to in life. It's, you know, it's, you just can't, you know, people got their lives, their jobs, their families, their kids, and it's unrealistic to be able to do that. So if you have a place to go where you can be in this character and be this person, still you, but this person that excites you, makes you feel alive, because we only live once. Let's make it good.
Exactly. Thank you.
Let's make it good.
Yes. Honestly, that for me, when I turn into Megan, that honestly like is like the highlight of my week, even though it's so much work, it's so exhausting. Like being that kind of socialite, making sure everyone's having a good time, like when that comes on, that honestly just like feeds my soul. It honestly feeds my soul, because I do drag for myself. I think you have to, because it's so much work, it takes so much out of you. But one of the biggest joys that I find with drag is giving other people the joy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
seeing people having a good time because of you just makes you like,
And that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And I like that you are doing it for you. I think that's probably one thing that is good to know. You know, it's like, why do people like to do it? Because they're doing it for themselves. They're not doing it for any external validation or for anything that may come across.
This is a big conversation.
It is a big conversation. That's why I wanted to make a point of saying that.
And funny enough, because one of the main reasons I came or kind of segued to the cabaret scene more is in the drag scene, I have a very good, like I'm very good at reading people, and I can instantly tell when someone is just there because they can smell what is possibly down the pipeline, so to speak. And it is, you can just feel everyone in the room, the eyes roll to the back of the head, because you can just smell when someone's there because they want, you know, they want the attention, they want the brand deals, they want all of that. And it's just a bit like,
I always wonder, I don't know if it's my training and counseling, but wonder why someone even is doing that. You know, it's not as simple as, you know, I need external validation. It's like, what? I wonder what's happened to that person that they feel they need that. So I think a bit of empathy with that is obviously also good, because again, you know, I don't want people to be going, I don't get it. It'd be like, you know, there is a reason why they need that. But it's so much better when you are doing something for you, 100%. Something that makes you, like you said, it feeds your soul.
It really does.
And that is what you want from life.
Yeah.
So if you're dressing up in drag, for example, and you're doing it for someone else, you're not making yourself internally happy. And I wonder what that does to the person.
I think it honestly stems from growing up. I mean, everyone goes through the stage of feeling kind of like brushed under the carpet, overlooked, not liked. And I think especially as queer people growing up, like, in school, you always just feel different.
Yeah.
Because there's very far and few between. I remember I was one of three queer people that were out in school. And I think, when I think about it, I think a lot of the reason why people want to go on these big shows and get all the attention and like the spotlight on them is because they want to feed that inner kid that still like feels singled out. I think that might be possibly what it is.
Yeah.
Is they want to like nurture that kid and like validate them by having everyone, you know, love them.
Yeah.
But it's not the right reason.
Yeah. I mean, that does make more sense for sure. Mm. For sure. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, it's a really big subject and it's complex.
Yeah.
But I think the most important thing in life, not just drag, but whatever you're doing, is you must do it for you.
Yeah.
So I'm just like stuck in my thoughts there. You know, just like,
it's such a big, because it just makes you think about so much. But at the end of the day, like, if you're not focusing on yourself and your happiness, like, you're just gonna, if you stand for nothing, you're gonna fall for everything.
Yeah.
Someone said, I don't know who.
God, I mean, I felt a bit I felt like an outsider most of my life for various reasons at school. I always felt different. And so I sort of understand what it's like. I mean, yeah, it's not exactly the same, but, you know, coming out at school, was that accepted for you?
I remember it was always kind of like a thing that was known, and it necessarily, obviously, like, I came out, but everyone was kind of like,
we know.
Which is just such a stupid thing, because I remember, I don't know why I was so scared to come out, but I remember I told one of my friends and they ran around the whole football pitch screaming it. And I was like, well, here we go.
Oh.
Yeah, because I was like, I just don't want to go through the labor of like going around to everyone and being like, oh, just, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh, are we that bored? It's like we're like posting on this. It was quite accepted. I think it was very interesting because half the people, or like more so to speak, half the straight boys, it made me grow a connection with them because they were like, you're like really cool, like we really mind you for doing that.
That's, you know what I mean? That's really good. Yeah.
And from my side, I was like, oh, like I thought you would have been like a bit of a...
An arse
about it, yeah. So that made me like appreciate them more. But then obviously the other half, bored hormonal teenagers.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like the hyenas and lion kin. They're just like,
It's a good analogy.
For the majority, like in high school, I was always kind of doing what I wanted to do. Like, even though I was getting some slack, like I'd be sitting at home painting on a very unblended smoky eyed on Instagram. You know what I mean? Like, I just kind of was like, okay. Like, I very much had the mentality in school of dying to leave because I just knew that there was not necessarily bigger things for me, but it just wasn't my place.
Yeah.
Like, I knew there was somewhere else that was like waiting, which I found out was cabaret. But I was always just like, I'm not going to be here long.
No.
And then after lockdown, I was at home for about another year, and then I was like, I'm going to like to central London now. And it's just like, even when I go home, I'm like, it's weird. You know what I mean? Like, we're all kind of stuck in these little areas, but you know, it just was never, it never felt like home, school.
Really?
Yeah. It was just like, there was always felt like there was something waiting down.
I know what you mean. I mean, school, I think for a lot of people, they're just like, it's so institutionalized, you know, you're going through the motions and you're trying to get the grades. Or in my case, I was just too busy trying to point my feet under the table because I had my career set. So I was like, there is this big picture.
Yeah.
So I could see the big picture, if you like. But for a lot of people, they're just like, you know, what am I going to do with my life? And for some people, you're like, I know there's something big.
Yeah.
I don't know quite what it is yet.
Yeah.
And that, again, that's an excitement, but it's a mindset as well.
Yeah.
It's got to be something that you're excited to go out into the big open world and create and put your stamp on it. And my God, have you done it already at the tender age of 22? My goodness.
Well, it's just like when I looked at people like Lady Gaga, the kind of stuff they were doing at 22, I'm like, Jesus, like I want to be working. I want to be like hustling. I want to be like developing, creating, growing. And it's just so bizarre because like all my friends are like 27, 28, but I just don't gel with people my age because I'm always just like thinking what's next. I'm always like trying to like push things and like grow, not just as a performer, but as a person myself, you know what I mean? So still just a baby, but you know.
Oh, but very, I don't want to say mature because I don't really like that word so much, but you've evolved so much for someone of your age. Yeah. And I think that is because like you said, you know, you're always changing, thinking about your next move, the big picture, you know, and I think that does really ground someone for liftoff, you know? So what's your favorite part of being a performer?
My favorite part of being a performer, I think this definitely ties into why I love cabaret. We all have our kind of niches in cabaret. We all have our bread and butter, what we're good at, what we're known for. Being able to create acts, which is such a personal thing, creating an act, because you're picking music that you like, you're picking a costume you like, you're choreographing it and telling a story. Being able to like go on stage, entertain people, first of all, is such a luxury to be able to like make other people happy and to be paid doing it. Being a performer, like being able to create kind of like a massive project of love, which is, you know, I'm still finding out about myself through my creativity, which is such a crazy thing. It's such a weird thing to try and understand, but just being able to create projects that are so, they feel like your little babies. Like each of my numbers feel like my little babies because the amount of work that has gone into them. I think just having the freedom to create and have other people experience that and enjoy that, it feels like a kind of love that you just can't buy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And it's so personal to every performer as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, choosing your music, your choreography, your costumes, it's incredible. It's a hell of a lot of work though.
Baby,
it really, really, really is, isn't it?
That's why everyone stands out so well though, because it's like you can really tell who a person is by when they walk on stage, you're like, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when Daniela comes on.
Oh yes.
With her rock tunes, she's going,
yeah.
Oh, I know her.
Yeah.
So honestly, it's like such a grand thing. It really is.
And do you have like a favorite act? That's a tough one.
It is a tough one. I feel like it'd be one that I'm working on right now.
Oh, exciting.
Yes, it's too... Okay, first of all, one of my favorite songs by one of my favorite performers from one of my favorite albums. And it is Erotica by Madonna.
Nice.
I'm working on an act which is so exciting. It's a full latex burlesque number. And it's performed against visuals that are self-created, which are very risque.
Sounds nice.
Very risky, yeah. I feel like you definitely enjoy this number.
Yes.
That's what I'm going to say for now. But the whole number, the reason that I love doing drag burlesque is because I go down to a glue-on merkin, which when I take that last thong off, everyone's like,
what? Yeah, you're like, hang on.
Wait, hold on a minute, back up. Honestly, the faces, we always laugh about it, specifically the Phoenix, because everyone just watches everyone's reactions like,
yeah.
This doesn't make sense. The reason I love doing drag burlesque is because it's so provocative in the sense of the way, like, it's really engaging because people get really confused. They get enticed and I don't know what I'm watching. So I wanted to push that a bit further and do, it's basically softcore porn, this number. It's basically soft, as much as we can get away with the licensings that we have.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to love it.
But seductive, I mean, it's an art in itself.
Yeah.
You know, doing a striptease, like Jules mentioned on a recent podcast, you know, it's difficult to actually have someone engaged for that amount of time. Mm-hmm. And you don't know what your audience is going to be. No. Some people have never been to a burlesque show before and they are slightly freaking out.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember going to a burlesque show. It was my first burlesque show that I ever went to with a couple. And we saw another couple on the front row seats.
Yeah.
And the lady, I mean, maybe it was something that she didn't do quite right, but she went up to the guy first. Now, I probably would have gone to the girl or sort of connected with her, but she sat on the guy's lap and lifted her leg up and she did actually the peeling of the tights on his lap. And it was amazing. And it was so funny, but she was not happy and they actually left. They didn't come back for the second half. So you have to know.
Yeah.
It's not just about the act. You have to know how to work your crowd and to really fill the room. The fact that you can read people goes in your advantage because you can go, this person needs a moment.
Yeah.
This person needs encouragement. This person needs the attention from me right now because that's what they need, you know, and that must be quite difficult to do.
It is quite difficult. I feel like, depending on the number that I'm doing, I may be reading a room and trying to make sure everyone's feeling comfortable, specifically the straight boys, because they like, I mean, in general, burlesque, everyone always jokes about it in the burlesque world because they're always like, okay, straight boys, you can clap. You know, your girlfriend's not going to get angry at you because you're like supporting a performer. But especially when it comes to someone like me, who they know is a guy underneath. Stripping dressed as a woman is very like, oh, like I'm not into this, like this gay stuff. So sometimes I'll read a room and try and, you know, be careful who I'm picking, make sure everyone's like putting my attention on the people that would like it and not putting the attention on people that wouldn't like it.
Yes.
You know,
it's very important.
Yeah.
Mm.
But then sometimes I just want to cause some trouble. I'm a little daredevil. So sometimes I'll like find the most, I don't want to say like the straightest guy, but I don't know how else to word it. Like the most kind of like laddie kind of guy, I guess.
Sort of
say.
Alpha.
Yeah, like that kind of, that kind of vibe. Pick him and just have some fun. Because, you know.
But it's good though. And it's like, it's nothing personal, and it's nothing that they need to be afraid of. Like, you're creating art and you're trying to make people laugh, and it's fun and it's relaxed, and it's almost like a come on, relax, enjoy it kind of vibe, you
and
know.
If you had to go two or four ways, I would absolutely despise it. Or they'd be like, you know what? And they'll like bite back into it, and I love that.
Yes.
I love that.
I think I've seen that happen like most of the time. I can't actually recall a guy going, no.
Yeah. The only really time it went bad was when I was performing for something, Main Pop Girlies or Heavenly Bodies of Freedom. And I, oh, no, that's a complete lie. It was neither of them. It was a Britney Spears night, and I was doing a Britney Burlesque number, and I went to pick a guy up to give him a bit of a lap dance on stage, and I was pouring, and I do not know like what he had sat like super glued. He was stuck to that chair. He would not get up.
Oh my
and
goodness.
I was like fighting him, and then I was like, I'm gonna have to give up on this. I'm gonna have to give up.
Yes.
But he was no bueno. No, not moving. No, don't touch me.
Just went to lead.
Yeah. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
So I gave a lap dance to my friend, but she was wearing a skirt. But she was the first person I could see. He's like, I need to make this beat. I need to hit this mark. She was the first person I could see. And I was trying to give her a lap dance, and she was trying to, bless her, hold her skirt down.
Oh.
So, you know, but that's the only time anything's ever gone, like, wrong.
But I wouldn't say it was even that wrong. I mean, not everyone's going to want to go up. And at least you had somebody that you're like, I know that this is safe. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, everyone thought it was hilarious. And I did too. It's always so hard because I was like, I don't mind laughing in numbers. When like if something goes wrong or whatever, I don't mind like laughing at myself because it's just like, you know.
Yeah, I guess if you take yourself too seriously, that's when things can impact you a lot more.
Yeah. For sure.
Mm.
I mean, I've fallen on stage plenty of times.
You wear very big heels.
I wear very big heels, yes. And not the most smart choice ones, so to speak. Yeah. I remember doing a show in Manchester, and I was wearing 10-inch platforms doing Pink. And someone was like, this is not a good choice. So I was doing headstands. I did 360 jump splits in these heels.
Oh, my
God. Yeah, this stage wasn't a big stage. It was at the Brewers, or the Two Brewers, which I forget which one's Manchester or London. But I remember doing that, and everyone was like, this is not a good choice. And I was like, well, it's the punk rock attitude, isn't it? You know, doing stuff that you probably shouldn't be doing, but...
Just going to push the boundaries.
Exactly, that's what I love.
Yeah. You've mentioned to me in a previous conversation that you say the industry isn't all beautiful and glamorous. So can you elaborate on that?
Wow. Multiple reasons. The biggest one definitely comes down to egos and the kind of, there's sometimes a few arguments about like people owning things or whatnot, tracks, styles of burlesque, certain aesthetics or costume pieces. It's quite a complex thing because people are precious, which I can understand because especially with things like burlesque, it's very expensive.
Yeah.
Very, very expensive. Mm. But kind of the reason why I moved more into cabaret is because in the drag world, which I mean, rightfully so in a sense, it's very much that image of I am the one, I am the diva.
Yeah.
Which we do love.
Course
on stage.
But a whole room of them that could be quite intense, I'd imagine.
On stage it's lovely, off stage come on,
oh no,
come on baby, like just be nice. Which sometimes is tricky. In the cabaret world it's completely different. Everyone is so loving, and you know, like I remember when I did a show at the Phoenix once, this was one of my first shows in the cabaret world, I went backstage and people said, that was amazing. Would you like some pointers? And I went, yes. And they gave me like really constructive criticism.
Amazing.
But it was in the sense that they wanted to push you.
Mm.
Not, it wasn't hurtful. It was everyone wants to uplift each other and make sure everyone's the best that they can be. And there's not that sense of fear that they're going to be better than you. So you need to kind of, you know, keep them down here. And that's what I love.
Yeah, I don't like that mentality, to be honest. I think, you know, pushing everybody up higher is going to raise the bar for the whole show. Keep going up. Keep helping each other and support all the time.
Everyone's just so grounded in what they do that no one's scared about uplifting each other. And that, honestly, like, for me, is like the love. You know what I mean? Because you're on stage entertaining people and giving them the love. It's like feeling that backstage, everyone's just like supporting each other. Everyone's, you know, zipping each other's dresses and, you know, like being like, oh, you got a bit of hair there, do you want me to, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's like, everyone's just making sure everyone's like,
Yeah, that's really good. I mean, in a dance company, like the ballet company, I don't remember it having that support. Yeah. Maybe that's just my memory of it, but it just always felt a little bit cold.
Yeah.
There was laughter, there was jokes, but it, I don't know, there was just this undertone of, well, you're all fighting for the same thing.
Yeah.
You're all doing the same thing.
Yeah.
There isn't that variety. So the tense atmosphere, even through the giggles and the things that we did, there was just hostile. That's the right word.
In the sense of maybe because everyone's striving for such a level of perfection that people get a bit scared of like, oh, they might get in, I don't, or, you know.
Yeah, it's a constant fear, like, well, who's going to be up on this casting? And
But at the end of the day, you all have the same dreams, you all have the same passions, and at the end of the day, it should just be your love for your craft.
Exactly.
That pushes you, not, you know.
Absolutely. And that goes across the board, by the way. You know, everybody needs to be thinking more about their own personal journey and not competing with everybody else's. Yeah.
As one of my friends, Lala, says, what was it? Says, lead with kindness. That's it. Lead with kindness.
Yes.
She always just leans to me, she would just say it, and I'm like, yes.
Actually, my kids know that I say, always be, and they say kind.
Yeah.
Literally, exactly. It's my go-to. I think it's so important. It's free.
Yeah.
You know, it makes you, I mean, there's no selfless good deed. It does make you feel good to be kind to others. Yeah. But then when you're feeling that self-love and love from others, it's just this really beautiful cycle that you're on.
Yeah, it really is. And it's just so fulfilling. Because it means that, like, even if things aren't going your way, if you know that you gave 100 and you was nice and you was, you know, open-minded to whatever the situation may be, like, you can't really have any regrets. You know what I mean?
No, you can't.
Do the best you could.
Do the best. That reminds me. Have you had any training to do the cabaret scene?
So back to one of our good friends, Miss Daniela Deville.
Yes.
Incredible superstar.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't had any necessary training for cabaret, but in terms of my sideshow skills, Daniela has been such a, I don't want to say mother and make that kind of complex, but like she's definitely watered the plant for me. She's definitely, you know, planted the seed and, you know. Because I remember the first time I saw her, I was like, wow, what's going on? She's like swallowing razor blades, hammering nails up her nose.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. And like growing up on like magic shows and stuff, I was like, this death-defying thing is like, everyone in the audience is like, oh.
It's a good reaction as well when you're shocking people and the what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. It's good.
I remember, I think it was Bloody Bones, I believe. I was sword swallowing once and someone in the middle of the show.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
They weren't very well.
No. But yeah, so my sideshow things Daniela has taught me, which I respect so much because Daniela, what I love about her, which is something I picked up on, is she researches acts that aren't done anymore and she revitalizes them and brings them back to life and gives them a new breath of fresh air.
She does.
So the fact that she's been so open to teaching me some of these skills, which they're skills. They're not tricks, they're skills. They really are.
Yes.
The nail's really going up the nose.
Oh, yes.
You know, like,
oh, yeah.
They're real concrete blocks. They're nothing's fake over here.
And the swords as well. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So much skill. Mm-hmm. You have to practice it a hell of a lot. Yeah. I think I saw a video of the two of you both doing the nail.
Just sitting backstage, like putting nails up my nose, just casually. Like,
just practicing.
Yeah, it's just that's kind of fun we have backstage. It's just, you know, she has been so open to teaching me these skills, which I am so forever grateful for. And we actually have a day planned soon where she's going to teach me walking on broken glass and, you know.
Ouch.
Things that I am generally very scared for, but.
Mine never matter.
Yeah, exactly. This kind of adrenaline and rush is what like I live for as a performer. So she's taught me my sideshow skills. And then in terms of eating fire, which is something else I also do,
cool.
I was taught to by Tommy Girl, who is an incredible, incredible, incredible fire eater. And just, you know, my kind of training for cabaret isn't like I've gone to school or something for it. It's just performers that, again, want to uplift other people and want to, like, if someone's interested in knowing something, they're happy to, like, teach you what they know, give you the bread and butter, per se.
Yeah.
So I also mentioned to a fellow performer, Bloody Bones, who is an incredible sideshow performer, that wanted to learn to sword swallow. And they were like, you know what? I can teach you all the things that I can teach you safely, but Source 12 of them, it's not one you can learn safely, you know?
Yeah.
And they went to somewhere, I can't think where in the world it was, but they went to another country to learn it because it's Sword and Swords.
Come on. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's not really like a little beauty course you can take, you know? It's a really dangerous thing.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So all the training that I do have comes from, like I said, constructive criticism from other performers and just, you know, it's more informal training per se. There's no kind of school for it, which I'm sad for.
I think there is a like burlesque school and stuff like that. But I mean, I would sort of argue that you learn more mm-hmm. when you are amongst the professionals
yeah.
than in the studio. You can learn a certain amount, mm-hmm. but even the likes of Seb Angelique, he has yes. transformed into this incredible performer because he became a performer.
Yeah.
He learned a little bit at the school, or, you know, not a little bit, a lot at the school, yeah. but developed the ideas through performance. So the fact that you got that kind yeah. of recognition, I mean, obviously you have star quality.
That's, thank
goes
you. Thank
without you. Saying. Five so they stars. They saw that potential and they were yeah. like, let's give you a bit more.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so it's lovely.
It's honestly just
best way to learn.
I know. And I honestly like couldn't be more thankful. Because like now one of my friends is saying she wants to learn fire eating and I was like, I can teach like the basics and stuff and like we can have some fun with it. But just like people being so open to teach you things which if you know could put them out of work a little bit if like the more say like for instance fire performers there are
yes true
people start fighting for gigs or whatnot. Mm. Well, not fighting but you know people need the work so the fact that people like Tommy and Daniela are so open to teaching me these skills that I wouldn't necessarily say a niche but you know there's a small lane of work for them
yes
the fact that they're so open to teaching me them I'm so grateful for and that honestly has helped like our relationships just grow because there's just that like trust there.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. And the people do trust you a lot and yeah. not just with that, with costumes. You Ooh. Create, design and create yes. costumes. And I've heard you actually make them for other artists. Is I that do, correct? Indeed.
Yes. So I started sewing. It kind of all goes back to the DIY roots, which is very much drag because I knew the kind of things I'd wanted to wear. Maybe not in the budget. Maybe not even real life things that have been made before. So I started sewing to keep costs down very low, especially when it comes to burlesque because
yes, it's very expensive, isn't it? Expensive, yes. All the rhinestones, it's so expensive.
Especially if you do it right. Uh-huh. The glass stones, the premium cuts,
the right glue.
Exactly. Yes. So that's why I started to learn to sew. And I started making all my hosting outfits, my performance wear. I've also made like 10-inch platform shoes.
Wow.
Made
wow.
ostrich fans, hats, just like the most like bizarre, crazy things. Like if I can think of a way to make it, I'll make it. And so that's kind of how it started. And then kind of performers would be like, oh, like, I want this, but I don't really have the money to like pay for like it to be made like by a proper costumier or, you know, I don't have the skill set to be able to like make it myself. And I'm like, well, we can sit down and we can talk about like a budget. We can talk about, you know, exactly what it is that you need. And that's where that started. And now I'm making like full like costumes for people.
Amazing.
And yeah, I kind of love it as well. Cause sometimes I perform and be like, oh, I got this outfit, but you know, it's got like a bit of a rip here or something. Like, could you like sew it together? I'm like, yeah, of course, babe. You know,
aww.
Like I took on like a robe for Daniela recently. I'm like working on a massive strawberry outfit for Ada Kahn.
Wow.
And for me, there is a bit of an anxiety with commissions because, you know, someone's trusting you with what's going to be one of their little babies
mm-hmm.
that you've got kind of water the plant for.
Yes.
But in the same sense of that, it's such a proud feeling when you see a performer go on stage and do their thing in something that you've made. Honestly.
Yes, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of my favorite things that I did was I made a latex bodysuit for Gothi Kendall for Drag Race UK Beat the World Series 2.
Wow.
And seeing that on TV, I was like, this is crazy. Because my introduction to drag was through Drag Race in the earlier seasons. And now seeing it on that same stage, I'm like, this is a bit of a mind fudge.
Yeah,
that's it. It was a bit of a mind fudge. But it honestly is just like the biggest joy to be able to create other people's visions and like bring it to life. And when they try it on and they look in the mirror, aww, it's like, it feels so good. Because yeah, a lot of the times I make of things that I haven't had training for. You know, I didn't go to self-taught fashion school.
Yeah.
I didn't, everything is kind of trial and error a little bit, which something I always make very clear, like it might take a little bit of time. So sometimes I amaze myself at the things that I can do, because it's such a complex thing, especially when you take it outside of just clothes, when it's like shoes or like hats or something like that. It's just like you're kind of figuring things out that haven't maybe not been done before.
Yeah.
Or not done this way, you know. It's always like trying to figure, it's a lot of brain work.
It goes back to your childhood as well, you know, that how can I make something work that perhaps shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And that's your,
I'm on a budget,
yeah,
because I'm not affordable in the sense of, you know, undercutting or whatnot, but a lot of the stuff that I do is like, you know, I'm not making like a crazy profit from it. It's just my love of like art and theater. You know,
yeah, as so long as you are able to pay the bills.
Oh,
though,
yes, the bills are paid.
That's good. That's good. That's good. Do you have a website for that, or is it to go through your Instagram and everything, which I will put in the show notes? Everything will be in the show notes.
I was working on a website at one point, and then it kind of slipped away a little bit. I think right now it's not on the forefront of things that need to be done necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I have made its own Instagram, although I kind of like having it on my Megan page.
Yeah.
I know, because it's not necessarily like a business per se. It's not like something that I want to like set up and develop.
Mm. It's your sideline.
Yeah, it's like a side thing, but I love having it merged with my drag, because it's not like its own entity. It's kind of like, you know, I'm a creative. This is a project I'm working on, like, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Part of the journey. I wouldn't say it's like it's its own separate, you know.
Yeah. But it's incredible. And I didn't know that you made shoes and hats.
Yes.
Oh
yes,
my goodness. Yes. What is it like living inside your creative mind? The response was enough.
Yeah. Where do I begin? My brain is always like a million miles per hour.
Yeah.
Thinking about, like, I'm always like saving images and, you know, I have so many numbers, so many looks, like so much that I want to make, fashion films, like little, like, you know, so very many exciting things that I'm like dying to do. But it's just always like, I literally have like a million notes apps of like different things, like ones like for outfits I want to wear, ones for like numbers, ones for like little like fashion films. Like I said, that's something I really want to get into, because I have training in like media production stuff, and like, ooh, I love that side as well.
Yes.
So it's just like so many like photo shoot ideas. It's honestly a bit of a cluster fudge, if I'm honest. I'm always like bouncing between like a million walls of different projects that I'm working on. Like if you go into my room right now, there's like a rail of like 10 outfits that are like halfway finished. You need to get around to. So it's definitely very exciting, especially because art and, you know, this kind of world that I live in is forever changing. Like, I mean, if you think about like fashion and music and theater, like it's every single day there's like new things rolling out. Mm-hmm. It's just like, oh, I love that. I like, you know, take bits from here and there.
Yeah.
It definitely makes me feel alive. But also sometimes it's kind of like, you know, like when you have like a really old Windows computer and it just goes done. The amount of like moments I have a day where I'm just like, oh my God, like my brain, like.
Yeah.
I need to whack out the meditation. I remember.
Oh, that's good. That's good. You have an outlet for it.
When I was going out, I think it was in 2021, my friend has this video of me where she walks into a room and there's just like meditation music playing. And it's me like in full drag about to go to a club. So I just like need a minute to just brace myself. So it's definitely very thrilling. But sometimes, you know, with the amount of different creative outlets that I have, sometimes it's a bit like, skewed. Like,
and I'm not as creative as you, that's for sure. But I find it's chaotic in there because I've got so much that I want to do, so much that I'm not even saying yet. You know, there's so much, you know, got to keep some under wraps, you know.
Exactly.
But yeah, there are times where I go, this is really exciting and I'm driven and I'm focused. And other times I go, this is all starting to go a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
I get overwhelmed and then sometimes I have to, even in the middle of editing,
I'm
thinking of too many things that I'm wanting to accomplish. And I close the laptop and go, I actually have to go and lie down for 5 minutes.
Exactly.
And I just, I mean, I guess that is kind of meditation. I just clear my mind and just I just have to literally, it feels like my brain is just in knots somehow. And I just need to like, do it all, just unravel, reset. Yeah. And then go.
It is a privilege in a way to be inspired by so much and have so much that you want to do in life. But at the same time, this is just what we like to do. There's also like living, eating, like social life, maybe another work life that you have to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Like that's just a small fragment, which is a scary thing.
You know, it is.
What we enjoy doing. It's not necessarily our whole life.
Yeah.
So definitely, sometimes she needs to.
Yes. Put a lid on it.
Exactly.
I've seen you. I mean, we went to the box.
You were
dressed up then. And that was actually the first time I met you. And it was really nice to see you. I felt like you were dressed as drag, and you were the—I don't want to say alter ego, but you were being Megan.
Yeah.
But we had so many moments where you were you.
Yeah.
When we were sat at the back and we were just talking, and I was just like, "I really love this person. So genuine and just lovely, but still you. But you were. It was really nice that you could bring the drag out.
Yeah.
But you weren't necessarily bringing out the. The diva. The diva was there, but it's soft. It's soft with you.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I think is that you've got this softness with it. That's that's why I wanted you on my show. Because I think that it's you are one to watch.
Thank you.
For sure. Go and watch her. No pressure or anything.
I think that's honestly what I love is for me it's more like when people are around me, I want them to feel, you know, like you know, like they kind of get like a bit of a kick off it. They get a bit of a pep in their step.
Yes.
But it's not kind of like a,
it's not intense.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. No,
I mean, my makeup looks very like bitchy. But, you know,
I know what you mean, but not.
Bite, but not like.
Yes,
it's not intimidating.
Not intimidating, just very powerful. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've sort of answered some of the next question, but what does the future look like for Megan Rain?
The future, oh my God. We're going back into the deep.
The deep sorry know, about that.
Things. No. The future, honestly, like what are my ideal future would be? It's probably not what it's going to be like, which obviously scares me. I definitely am pushing a lot of new numbers, which are new for me and I think haven't really been done before. Which is very exciting.
Yes.
I definitely want to get into making fashion films this year for some of the pieces. So I have so many outfits and stuff that I want to make that I'm like, I would never wear that. Like to a club, impractical. Hosting, I would probably fall down a pair of stairs, like a flight of stairs.
Oh,
like,
gosh.
You know.
Yeah.
Some things I'm like, that is just not, baby, be realistic. so I'm like, but I can make that and wear it in like a little photo shoot, like a fashion film or something and really like, you know, play with like, you know, the editing. So that's definitely down the line. Something I didn't really realize is something that I wanted until an incredible burlesque performer, Demi Noir, brought it up with me. But I think definitely owning a cabaret venue, maybe.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because part of my job is hosting, like, well, I wouldn't say it's part of my job. I like look after everyone, make sure, like, go backstage, like, all the performers, like, you know, Kiki with them, and I was like, oh, like I really love, you know, not that it's really, you know, working behind the scenes there in the sense of like admin, but I'm like, oh, I love like, you know, doing everything. I do a bit of stage managing. Sometimes I'll like help out on like the bar or something, like, or when I'm helping out on the bar, I mean, making myself an espresso martini.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of the same thing.
I am helping.
Yeah.
Honest.
I know, honestly, they got so bored of me asking for an espresso martini that they shame about it. It was like,
it's one of my favorite cocktails.
It's so good.
Yes.
I've got a new Irish one now, which is trying.
I'm there. I'm there on Thursday, I think. So I am there.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to be there together.
Oh, brilliant. I was going to surprise you, but I just couldn't wait.
I love it.
Megan, I think that you are just incredible, like incredible, a showstopper. I think that your future is very, very bright. I think you will have all the things that you want and more because you put your mind to it. You see things, you're open to everything.
Mm-hmm. It's important.
And you're so, you, I feel the energy in the room with you. You've just got something, star quality.
Oh, thank
you're
you.
Incredible. Thank you so much for coming on my
show. Thank you so much for having me. I hope that this was a grand interest into the crazy life.
Yes.
That sometimes I'm trying to tame the beast and it's just like, you know. So I hope that,
it's an insight. It was an insight.
Yeah, it's a deep insight.
Thank you so much, Megan. It's been amazing.
Thank you, my love.
I was absolutely beaming after this podcast. Such an inspiration and the perfect insight into the life of a performer in drag. I am so excited for Megan's future. What a force of nature. I am so proud of this show and I'm excited for the future. Please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review and share with others. Let's boost this show. I have big, exciting plans. Now I'm going to leave you with a poem I found by Donna Levy. There is inside you all of the potential to be whatever you want to be. All of the energy to do whatever you want to do. Imagine yourself as you would like to be, doing what you want to do. And each day, take one step toward your dream. And although at times it may be too difficult to continue, hold on to your dream. One morning you will awake to find that you are the person you dreamed of, doing what you wanted to do, simply because you had the courage to believe in your potential and hold on to your dream.